and try to stage a rescue, or we hole up here.
I fear that our companions will most certainly be put to the torture and then slain within the next 24 hours. Do we agree? Well, we don't disagree.
So what, Doc?
I surmise that Simon will want to know what we are doing. He has the numbers, so he could spare 3 or 4 to creepy crawl in the darkness.
I think that makes sense, Doc. Yeah. So let's get ready for them.
Dean was to remain in the house, moving silently around, cat-footed, never staying in one room for more than 30 seconds, checking out the windows on every side, as well as climbing up to the attic and watching from there. He was armed with his own blaster, as well as one of the ranch's hunting rifles. Christy took the outside perimeter, working on the assumption that she was actually fittest and fastest. She also probably had the best night vision of any of them. She was content to just carry her own Smith & Wesson Double Action 640.
And I shall busy myself by circling the house and also keep a weather eye open for trouble in the barns and outbuildings.
Doc rapped the floor with the ferrule of his sword stick.
With this and my Lamar, I feel total confident in my ability to rout any number of the ungodly.
At any sign of trouble, Dean, you open fire. Doc and I head straight back here. You unlock the back door into the kitchen so we can get in.
Sure.
As the night moved on, Dean was aware of how much the old house settled and shifted, sun-warmed timber still shrinking, doors and window frames contracting and creaking. Every sound brought the boy spinning around, fingers tight on the butt of his 9mm Browning, waiting, trembling. Christy stood in the cover of the orchard, her nostrils catching the freshness of the apples and the plums, waiting to get her sight adjusted to the darkness. The moon had vanished behind the gathering clouds, and it had become much colder in the past hour. She could see the glow of the campfires of the religious crazies, taste the wood smoke. Doc stepped as quietly as he could into the largest barn, through the big front doors that were the only entry into the wood-framed building. There was the smell of horses, and he could hear the animals moving a little uneasily, hooves shifting in their stalls as they caught the scent of a human. He walked to the far end, where he knew that the bloody-minded mule Judas was penned, 2 clear empty stalls away from any of the other animals.
Greetings, you old bastard.
Doc dodged back as the mule made a lightning-fast attempt to take the ear off his head, missing by inches. Doc swung his sword stick, rattling the silver lion's head hilt between Judas's eyes. The traditional pleasantries exchanged, Doc rubbed his hand down the animal's neck, leaning against the side of the stall.
Maybe we should turn you out, you devil's walking parody. Send the ungodly and unwashed scattering like chaff before the cleansing wind. Then return here with Mildred and Jack on your back. Be good to... What?
The mule looked suddenly away from him. For a moment, Doc thought Judas was going to snap at him again, and he stepped quickly to one side, lifting his cane in readiness. But the long, demonic head was turned toward the doors, with spiteful eyes glinting in the gloom of the barn. Doc found that someone seemed to have sucked all of the oxygen from the dusty building, and he tried to draw a reassuring breath.
What?
The filtered moonlight that came through the myriad cracks in the walls of the ancient barn gave a strange undersea quality to the atmosphere, like being inside a wrecked galley, settled on a fathoms-deep reef. Doc backed away into one of the empty stalls, the butt of the ponderous golden-grade Lama feeling cold and slick against his hand. He still held the hilt of the sheathed sword stick in his left hand. Realizing this, he holstered the revolver and drew the blade of Toledo steel, laying the ebony shell in the straw at his feet. For a moment, he drew the slender sword to his eyes, making out the ornate lettering. Nome saques sin razón, nome envaines sin honor.
Draw me not without reason, and sheathe me not without honor.
The Lama was back in his right hand, the hammer cocked over the buckshot round. Judas was still restless, his head turning between the back entrance to the building and the stall where Doc was hiding. Christy knelt by a trim apple tree, laying her right hand on the rough bark. Her fiery, sentient hair was bunched at her nape, packed as tightly against her skull as possible, a sure sign that something was seriously wrong. She closed her green eyes for a few seconds, trying to concentrate on the feeling power of Gaia, the Earth Mother. The air around her seemed to throb with a terrible tension. There was a movement somewhere around her. But it could easily have been the camp of the Flagees, their fires flickering, ruby bright, out across the desert.
Careful, Doc.
A figure ghosted out of the darkness, deep black against the blackness, right in front of Doc's crouching figure. It was so sudden and so silent that it took him by surprise, and he nearly squeezed the trigger on the Lamaw. But his better judgment asserted itself just in the nick of time, preventing him from firing the gun. Instead, he stood and thrust with the rapier, wrist and arm straight as a die, aiming slightly upward, feeling the needle tip slide between the protecting ribs on the left side of the intruder's body. It was a perfect, clean kill. The man dropped to the floor like a sack of meat, shrouded in cotton rags. Doc withdrew the blade, stepping confidently out into the open space between the stalls, aware only of the sudden restlessness of the animals, disturbed by the hot reek of freshly spilled blood, to find himself confronting a second assailant who stood 10 feet away, holding a long hafted hatchet. At that moment, Doc remembered one of the trader's sayings that Ryan had often repeated to him.
Pull the trigger too soon, and you'll probably be fine. Pull it too late, and you'll probably be dead.
But the 3.5 pounds of steel, lead, and gold remained unfired.
Move, and I'll fill you full of holes.
No, unbeliever. You move, and I'll fill you full of fucking holes.
But they haven't harmed anyone.
Not yet. Don't mean they won't.
The speaker was an old woman, bent double, her hands knotted with arthritis.
True enough. But you reckon there's less than a dozen stickies out in the woods?
We never counted more than 8.
J.B. shook his head. Melting snow dappled the shoulders of his worn leather jacket, misting the lenses of his glasses, darkening his fedora.
Only 8. All of them grown men or some women and children?
There was a silence. Ryan's guess had put the population of the small vale at around 60 souls. It was set just north of the old line between Oregon and Washington states, to the east of the Columbia River. The highway was in reasonably good condition, seeming little traveled. According to JB's map, the blacktop should bring them to the crossing of the Snake in a few miles. The last part of the journey had been relatively uneventful, despite diminishing weather. Twice their progress northwest had been checked by vicious flurries of snow and temperatures that had dropped savagely to 20 below, making the eight-wheeler occasionally difficult to handle on the ice-covered tracks. Once it was only the remnants of an iron fence that kept them from sliding over a 200-foot drop. There had been the usual detours to avoid quake-riven trails and a couple of hostile vills that had shown willingness to resist all outlanders, but even the occasional high-powered hunting ground did no damage to the armistice of the wag. Ryan and JB ignored these sporadic attacks, not even bothering to return the desultory firing. Time was still on their side. Since leaving New Mexico, the friends had been nearly a month on the road, leaving them a good 2 weeks to reach Seattle and track down Aben the Trader. Easy traveling. Apart from one minor problem, they'd almost run out of gas. The main tanks had been run dry since the previous morning, and now the reserve gauge was trembling into the red. The armorer's guess had been about another 50 to 80 miles before the laboring engine finally coughed its way into stillness. And that would leave them stranded in the wilderness, at least 150 miles short of their destination. Which didn't make their planned rendezvous completely out of the question, just difficult. Now they'd found themselves in the little settlement of Mitchell Springs, which boasted that it had supplies of gas available for anyone who could raise the necessary amount of jack. Ryan and JB couldn't. But the inhabitants of Mitchell Springs were also prepared to involve themselves in some serious trading with the two stone-eyed outlanders.
Gas for chilled stickies. Chilled stickies. Stickies.
The leader of the Smallville was in his early 50s, with a face covered in scabs that his fingers picked at constantly. He also had an occasional lapse into echolalia, repeating his own words again and again. His name was Andrew Shepherd.
How much?
Oh boy, oh boy. How much? 8 stickies? I reckon 20 gallons for 8 stickies.
Do it yourself. Save 20 gallons of gas. If it's that easy.
Then how about 50 gallons, huh? 50 gallons, yeah. Gallons.
Ryan was